afternoon, and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Monday. To get you through this crisis. In a world where so few things feel reliable, we remain reliable. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. We are live on AM 770 KTTH. Streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. Got a lot to get to. We only have 2 hours left to do it. Hundreds of people riot and looted during a clash with police last night in Chicago. It was rather instructive. We'll tell you why. Attorney General Bill Barr jumps into Antifa and tries to get to the point of why do they do what they do? What is it really about? Is it just about socialism? No, it's not. Plus, Jesse Jensen's going to stop by. He is the Republican candidate who's going to take on Kim Schreier in Washington's 8th District. He's going to break some news to us. He's got an ask. He's going to make it right here on the Jason Rancho Show. This hour of which is brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
As we wait to see, as the Seattle City Council is getting ready to vote on a budget that's going to cut up to 100 police officers in the coming days, once they give it the thumbs up, we take a look at what is still going on all across the country. More unrest. It continues in Portland. It got worse in Chicago. There was some folks fighting back in Fort Collins. Earlier this morning, there were hundreds of looters in Chicago following a police-involved shooting in the city's south side. And so naturally, bad actors use this as an excuse to break into businesses, stealing everything from booze to ATM machines. Now, the person the Chicago PD shot was a dude who shot at them first. This is a guy who's believed to be in his late teens, early 20s, who was brandishing a gun. Cops were called. Cops showed up. The bad guy ran. Cops ran after him. Bad guy pulls out the gun, shoots at the cops. Cops shoot back. But this was something that some folks could take advantage of. So the bad actors went online in a coordinated attempt to cause a whole bunch of looting so that they can cover their own criminal behavior. They did this all under the guise of a protest, of civil unrest. They went online. They were flat out lying about stuff to gin up anger so they could loot and get away with it. Here's the mayor, Lori Lightfoot.
The individual fled. He turned around. He fired upon the police. The police returned fire. He was hit, I believe, in the shoulder and is recovering from those injuries. But I want to be very, very clear. This was not an unarmed juvenile, nope. Unfortunately, as being propagated on social media.
They're all lying online. 400 officers were dispatched to the loop, as it's called. 400 cops. Because what they saw was caravans of cars driving into the city. According to CBS2, they said looters arrived with boxes of rocks and bricks to break into stores. Does that seem coordinated? Yeah, it is. That was coordinated. They knew what it was they were doing. They were taking advantage of it. Unfortunately, there weren't enough police there at the time able to keep up with the size of the crowd, and so it got out of control. The Chicago PD superintendent, David Brown, said that the violence was very clearly organized.
DPD became aware of several social media posts encouraging looting downtown. Officers were dispatched to our downtown area once we got word of the social media posts. 400 officers were dispatched to our downtown. As the officers arrived to our downtown, the first incident happened at a store near the 87th and the Dan Ryan Expressway. Soon, car caravans were headed into the loop. This was not an organized protest. Rather, this was an incident of pure criminality. This was an act of violence against our police officers and against our city.
Yep. So as a result, effective tonight, access to downtown Chicago is being restricted from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. And it's going to be there indefinitely. Now, a reporter who's unnamed asked a question of Lightfoot and Brown, trying to get a better sense if a lot of the looting that we saw this morning is a result of a whole bunch of criminals who got away with the looting the first time they did it a few weeks ago. That there wasn't really any punishment. And just like here in King County, here in Seattle, when you do get arrested, they just release you anyway. That question triggered Lori Lightfoot.
It almost sounds as though you're saying this is the reason we have it is because the courts and the prosecutors were not doing their job, that they were going too easy on the looters from the last time around.
Don't take it from me. Just go by what's been done. I don't want to do your job for you, but just go by what's been done. There were no consequences for the people arrested.
Craig, let's be clear. I mean, don't bait us, okay? Do not bait us. This is a serious situation.
Uh-huh.
People are concerned about their safety. Officers are concerned about their safety. So don't bait us. What we're saying is, as a result of what happened last night, there have to be consequences. We've got teams of people that are aggressively out there identifying the people responsible, looking at the plates, and we're going to bring them to justice. But when we do, and we do make those arrests, our expectation is that this is going to be treated with the level of seriousness that it should be.
Unlike before, which was kind of the point that this reporter, I believe, was trying to make. Now, as this is happening in Chicago, we go to Portland, where it was night number 73 that, yes, again, a riot was declared. Officers got hit with fireworks directly. That is illegal. That is a criminal attack. Even if it happens in a dumpster fire of a city like Portland. The leadership there is letting this get out of control, and they are not empowering their officers to do what it takes to aggressively go after these people, all because they're pretending that these are peaceful protests, and all they're doing is trying to enjoy their First Amendment rights to throw fireworks directly at officers, hitting one in her neck to the point where her face mask melted. An officer who was standing just about 10 feet away from this woman, this other police officer, was injured in the leg by a piece of the firework striking his leg. That is not protected speech. It's not speech at all. It's a crime. Their intent is to hurt people. The intent of these Antifa agitators is to kill police officers. They openly chant that's what their intent is. Just last week, they tried to burn down a police precinct. Knowing cops were inside, they barricaded the exits. And yet this continues to happen every single night. Where's the media on this nationally? Fox is covering it. CNN isn't. MSNBC isn't. New York Times barely talking. New York Times over the weekend? Finally talked about how CHOP was dangerous. Little late. They didn't even do it right after two murders. The national media is giving a pass to this, and it's absolutely outrageous. 16 people at least were arrested last night in Portland. One protester, who didn't want to be named, said she was hit with an impact munition. Quote, they just started shooting indiscriminately at people. And you see, I was shot here, essentially for nothing, for obeying their orders. No, sorry. You don't get a pass anymore when you're at these riots every single night, when you're a part of the group. I don't care if it's during the portions of which are quote-unquote peaceful, when you know that every single night it devolves into this kind of madness where people are trying to murder cops. You no longer get a pass to say, oh, it's a peaceful protest. We were just standing here. And then the gazpacho came out. The gazpacho. And they shot indiscriminately.
The gazpacho?
The gazpacho.
The gazpacho.
The gazpacho, like, because they're Nazis.
The gazpacho.
The gazpacho.
Like the Italian dish?
What are you talking about? Let me tell you a thing or two about Hitler, okay? Because if we ignore history and don't learn from it, I think, like, we repeat it? Are we doomed to repeat it? Like a rerun? Yeah, like a... We're doomed to repeat it. And so when the gazpacho...
The gazpacho.
That's why I said gazpacho.
You know.
When they come out... This is Trump and his stormtroopers. So we gotta fight back against the gazpacho.
The Gestapo?
Excuse me?
The Gestapo.
Gesundheit.
No. You're saying it wrong. It's not.
No.
It's not
do you
gazpacho.
Have a mask on when you sneeze? Put on a mask. The gazpacho is out there.
The Gestapo.
Gazpacho.
No. You're saying it wrong.
Are you mansplaining to me?
I really...
Are you mansplaining to me? What are you, some punk kid? Where'd you go to school?
You think I'm mansplaining?
I have a liberal arts degree and a minor in queer literature.
Probably from a very exclusive university, huh?
Well, it was online. I took it. It's Hampshire College. But it was just the online part.
And they taught you all about the gazpacho?
All about the dangers of the gazpacho. And I'm telling you, Donald Trump is like Adolf Mussolini.
That's right. That's exactly who he's like.
Thank you.
Hey, you
guys, I just won another convert over to our side.
I couldn't
join in the fight against the gazpacho.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you.
Who'd you say? Adolf Mussolini?
Yeah.
Wow. That's
he ran France into the ground.
That's a horrible leader.
The worst. And he was really short. And he had a very short temper. See what I just did there? That was funny. That's really what we're talking about when we listen to these lunatics. Except someone decided in Fort Collins to fight back. A bunch of Antifa lunatics showed up. And the pro-police folks who were there at a rally, they said, yeah, no.
Bye-bye, commies come. Bye-bye, go home. Bye-bye. Oh, shit. Here we go.
I'm good.
Oh my. You guys came to the wrong city, boys and girls.
Yes, they did. They apparently tried to take the American flag from a veteran who was in a wheelchair, who was there for a pro-police rally. Don't do that. These people are not going to allow it. The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington State, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. Don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn, at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N. Nunn Better Tax Resolution. If you want to send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
It is official. Jesse Jensen will take on progressive Seattle-style Democrat Kim Schreier in Washington's 8th. This should be represented by a Republican. It covers everything from Buckley and Bonnie Lake to Sammamish and Cleellum. Joining me on the line is Jesse Jensen. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Jason. Really appreciate it.
You have an announcement to make. Go.
Yes, we do.
What is it? Don't keep it from us. We're excited.
I was going to say, we're so excited and we're honored to be the harbingers of change in this election cycle, right? The people of the 8th Congressional District made it very clear that now is the time for change. And they've made it very clear that they don't know where the representative is. They don't know what she's doing. And they certainly don't know what she's standing for, because she hasn't really accomplished anything. And what she has done is out of step with the voters of the 8th Congressional District. So today, on your show, I want to challenge Congresswoman Schreier to 5 debates. We want to talk COVID-19. We want to talk jobs and the economy. We want to talk the environment. We want to talk about issues that are important to farmers and to growers in this 8th Congressional District. And we need to have her held accountable, and we need her to step up, come out of essentially hiding, and debate us on this stuff.
5 is a lot, isn't it?
Hey, you know, for her, I think she probably wants to do 0. I think she's very much taking an approach where, you know, she's imitating Joe Biden. She would much rather kind of hang out and not do any campaign events. She's telling us that we don't need gatherings more than 5. We don't need to go to local restaurants. We're happy to put a TV screen of her on the other podium, and we can be there with the debate. 5 is more than I'm sure she would like, but that's what we're calling for. The voters deserve it. We need to be heard in Auburn. We need to be heard in Issaquah. We need to be heard in Ellensburg. We need to be heard in Chelan. The voters of the 8th Congressional District want change, and they need to hear from the candidates.
Now, assuming she says no to this, what is the plan? Because she's going to be clear, she's going to say no to 5. She maybe says yes to 1. We'll see if that even happens. I imagine that we're just going to pretend the coronavirus means you all can't have a debate. But she's definitely not going to say yes to 5. So what's the plan after that?
Well, look, there's this crazy thing called Zoom, right? If she doesn't want to do it in person, we can certainly do it virtually. You know, we were just online looking for chicken suits, right? If she doesn't want to come out and debate us, we're going to follow her around. We're going to call her out on it. The voters of the 8th Congressional District deserve to hear from their representation, and they haven't in the last 2 years. She was too busy impeaching Donald Trump to do anything that actually matters for the voters of the 8th Congressional.
And Jesse, you can tell that they're scrambling. This is not a seat that they think they're going to be able to keep blue on the Democratic side. There was an email memo that went out to the press today making the case for Kim Schreier. And again, it went out by a Democratic committee email. It didn't come out from Kim Schreier because she doesn't really talk to anybody in the media, but it says that Representative Schreier has been dedicated to addressing the needs of farmers and families, championing common sense water solutions, rural broadband, and wildlife protection. So she's clearly trying to make the case, or the Democrats are, that she cares about the east side of this district. What say you?
Well, it's interesting because she voted against rural broadband access. She did that back in February, I believe, roll call vote number 24. She voted it in January 10th. She voted against rural broadband access. She recently voted against the Born Alive Amendment back in February 28th. Pro-choice, pro-life, I think everybody in the 8th Congressional District can agree that late-term abortions are wrong, except for Congresswoman Schreier. It's interesting that the DCCC has to send out that note because apparently Tina Pawlandowski on Q13, when asked, couldn't list a single accomplishment from Congresswoman Schreier. And then she went on to call her Dr. Wyman. It's not a good sign when the chair of the Democratic State Party, A, doesn't know your name, and B, doesn't know what you've done in the last 2 years.
Yeah. Shocking, though, right?
I mean, this is a Republican seat. The voters of the 8th Congressional District have been represented by common sense conservatives going back to Jennifer Dunn and beyond. I'm proud to have the endorsement of Jennifer's son, Reagan Dunn. I'm proud to have the endorsement of Congressman Dave Reichert. Proud to have the endorsement of Congressman Dan Crenshaw, some real rock rib conservatives on the right hand side of the aisle. And I think the voters understand that they need to have somebody that can support President Trump and can get stuff done and can respectfully disagree with him and have a communication and open bandwidth when he says or does something that doesn't fit with the voters of the 8th Congressional District and actually accomplish something. And that is something that Congresswoman Schreier has yet to do. She has yet to accomplish anything besides casting bad votes for the 8th Congressional District.
Well, speaking of endorsements, and one that has yet to come in is Keith Swank, who was your Republican challenger. He was on the show last week basically saying he questions some of your conservative positions on issues. And the impression I got was he doesn't necessarily believe you to be a true conservative. Are you a conservative Republican?
I am a conservative Republican. That's something I've been saying from the very beginning. Keith and I have been sort of in conversation, going back and forth. We're going to unite the party going forward. Keith and I agree that Congresswoman Schreier is way out of touch with the 8th Congressional District. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I congratulate Keith on a great race run. I think he has a lot of incredibly valid points, and those points will be heard in this debate going forward. He is a 30-year police veteran of the Seattle Police Department, and you and I were both at the Support the Police, Back the Blue, in Seattle, calling against these crazy policies that Kishama Sawant and, in effect, Congresswoman Schreier want at the same time. Congresswoman Schreier will say she wants more social workers to go on police calls, which if you talk to any police officer will tell you that's probably not a great idea. But then she turns around and votes to remove $22 million from Bryan criminal justice grants that go to local and state law enforcement. So she's in effect defunding the police at the federal level. And it's insane. And this cannot go forward. And the voters of the 8th Congressional District understand that.
The only way that Kim Schreier wins re-election is if no one realizes what her record has been. Washington 8th is not downtown Seattle and Capitol Hill, and yet it's got a congresswoman who votes as if she's representing Capitol Hill, and that's a problem.
Well, and Chairman Emmer has released a press release talking about that exact same thing, and he pointed out what I've been pointing out for the last year, that Congresswoman Schreier has a 100% voting record with Nancy Pelosi. She has a 95% voting record with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. When you're closer aligned with AOC in the 8th Congressional District than you are with a grower in Wenatchee, that's a problem. This is the same congresswoman who accused our growers of being slave owners for using H2 visas. So, I mean, this is H2A. So this is just, again, completely out of touch, not representing the 8th Congressional District. Maybe she should try and run for Pramila Jayapal's seat.
Yeah, Pramila Jayapal.
She'd be better suited over there. Thank you.
Yeah, no kidding. We've been talking with Jesse Jensen. He is calling for 5 debates with Dr. Kim Schreier from Washington's 8th. His website, jessejensen2020.com, jessejensen2020.com. Go there now to learn more about his race. And, of course, understand that he's going to be up against a lot of big money coming from out of state to keep a Seattle progressive in this position of Washington's 8th. You need to donate whatever it is you can to help Jesse. Again, the website, jessejensen2020.com. Jesse, thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, Jason.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Again, jessejensen2020.com. Go there now to show your support. Contribute some money if you can. And let's turn Washington 8 red again. That's what it should be. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Coming up, big look.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Oh, hey, look at that. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Here's how this works. The media is hyper-focused on stories coming out of Seattle. They end up not spending too much time on you guys, where you guys live, where you guys work, where you guys care about most. So we ignore Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on you. And we start in the city of Graham, where Pierce County deputies were involved in a deadly shooting last night. They were responding to a whole bunch of different 911 calls that they got around 9 o'clock last night, saying a man was firing a gun, possibly holding a knife to a neighbor's throat.
Even when deputies arrived on scene, they could still hear shots being fired.
That's Sergeant Darren Moss Jr. He tells our sister station, Cairo Radio, that around 11:30, after deputies rescued 3 people from a home, the man came out of the home, started to shoot at them. So they fired back. They killed him. They didn't get up yesterday wanting to do that, but they did it in service of the community.
Everything has calmed down quite a bit this morning, and right now the investigation team is out here just doing the initial investigation, interviewing witnesses and things like that.
Now, thankfully, no officers were injured in all of this. The Thurston County Critical Incident Investigation Team is doing the investigation, and they'll figure this out. I have a very simple rule: if you don't ever want to get injured during an interaction with a police officer, the best way to not get killed by cops is what?
Don't pull a weapon or try and attack a cop. You should probably just listen to what the cop does.
Listen to what they say.
I'm so smart.
I mean, to be fair, we have done this many, many times. You should know this by now. But when you decide to pull a weapon on a cop, you should fully expect that they're going to use theirs and they're going to have considerably better aim than you. You should consider that. They don't want to use their weapon. There's not a single cop out there who shows up to work saying, I want to kill someone. I can't wait. They don't want to do that. They have to live with that. Even when it was 100% justified in what they did, and it seems right now it's justified, they don't want to have to do it. But they will, to protect themselves, each other, and you. So do not pull a gun or any weapon on a cop. Write that down in your journal 400 times if you're wondering, mostly folks on the left, what the best way to deal with a cop is. Don't pull a weapon on him. Over in Spokane, there was another fight over a mask. This one is rather ridiculous because the suspect, Cody Hansen, 35, he's actually from Kent. He allegedly broke the jaw of a 72-year-old disabled veteran. Now, was caught on video in the lobby of a hotel. The man's just sitting there in his wheelchair. The suspect, Cody, walks over to him. You can't hear anything. It's just video. But all of a sudden, the 35-year-old punches the 72-year-old in a wheelchair several times in the face. And as he's walking out, this part kind of killed me a little bit. Wasn't necessarily just the guy getting beat up, but the guy in the wheelchair has a dog, and I think it's a dachshund, and it's a little thing, and it goes after that dude. It's still stuck on the leash, so it could only go so far, but the dog, I don't know why in all of that I was more impacted by the dog, because the poor dog sees his master, his owner, getting attacked, and he tried to do something.
The dog was in fight mode. I respect
totally.
That.
Totally.
I respect that.
So why did they get into this fight? Why was the punch thrown? The victim told police that he made a comment to Hansen's girlfriend about not wearing a mask before being attacked. I have previously said, don't be the person trying to police the masks because something like this could happen. It's not warranted. It's very clearly an overreaction if Cody Hansen did this, and it sure seems like he did. He should go to jail for the fullest punishment allowable under the law. Also, don't be the person who tells people to wear a mask.
But why does the dude have to punch a 72-year-old or 77?
I'm not saying he has to. I'm not saying he should. I'm not saying it's a reasonable reaction. I'm saying people are crazy. People are stupid. People are violent. Why give them a hard time at this point? Unless they're getting in your face and you have a reason to directly tell them, hey, get out of my face or put on a mask. Something like, okay, fine. But if you're just minding your own business and you see someone without a mask, continue to mind your own business.
Yeah, mind your own business.
You're getting yourself out of situations like this. This didn't have to happen. He's not anything more than a victim. He's not an agitator, nothing. I'm saying you open yourself up to this kind of treatment with crazy lunatics when you get involved if you don't have to. I see stuff all the time. If someone's standing in front of me and they jaywalk, and I'm waiting like an idiot at the cross section to walk.
Don't wait, just go.
Well, I am just making it up. I usually am the person who goes and the person behind me is staying. But let's in this world reverse it. Should I yell at them, hey, you, stop jaywalking? I'd be right to call them out. I'd be right to say, maybe you shouldn't do that. However, I don't. You want to know why I don't?
Because you don't want to get punched in the face?
Because I don't want to get punched in the face.
So pick and choose when you're going to say it. I mean, say it if you're bigger than the guy or...
Well, yes, obviously that goes into it. If it's a dweeby-looking kid, and for like a 12-year-old with a clarinet, I'm going to yell at him and say, hey, dummy, stop that. And then he's going to say, stop what, mister? And then I might end up being the aggressor, but only because I had a bad childhood. And yes, I did play the clarinet when I was in third grade.
That obviously didn't work out as a career for you.
No, it did not. Downtown Sumner is creating little parklets and parking lots so restaurants can offer outside seating for their restaurants during the pandemic, according to the Tacoma News Tribune. Hometown Charm Cafe is the first business to add the additional seating. According to the co-owner, her name is Teresa Maycumber, she said since adding the parklet last week, business has increased by 20%, which is a bad stat because it was no one went into the restaurant before. No, 20% doesn't mean anything. 20% could account for three additional people.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Yes.
What's a parklet?
So a parklet is this, it's like a patio that you can install in a parking lot. So it essentially has a wooden plank on the ground. It's almost like you're setting up literally a patio in your backyard, but instead of doing it in your backyard, you do it outside of a business on a sidewalk. It usually has handrails around it. It's just a little enclosed space.
Okay, gotcha.
It's a platform, and then you can bring in your chairs and seating and have that go so people can stay outside, but it's very clearly defining. So if you're driving, for example, you don't want to accidentally run into the parklet. You want to make sure that people don't confuse it for a parking lot. So you put up the sides of the little parklet.
I learned something today.
There you go. It's a 7x22-foot platform in this case, and apparently can hold up to 18 people.
Wow, I'm impressed.
The city of Sumner spent $16,000 for two of these parklets. One is at the Hometown Charm Cafe. The other is at Craft 19 Coffee Shop on Main Street. They say restaurants were not charged a permit fee to apply for the pilot project, but they are providing liability insurance. In the future, the city will lease the parklets to restaurants during the warmer months. So this sounds like more something they're going to do. It's an investment down the line. They'll pay some money right now, but not actually charge, because there are a lot of restaurants that are struggling. Once the pandemic is over, once things are under control, then they'll say, hey, cafe, coffee shop, we'll let you rent this little parklet out, and then they'll recoup the $16,000 cost. I love this. I think this is a really good idea. Anything that we can do to help these restaurants survive, not only because it's the right thing to do, but it's also fiscally responsible. What we don't want to have happen is have to spend more and more and more money locally or nationally, coming from our tax dollars, to go into a recovery. We want the recovery to happen sooner. The harder it is for these businesses to operate, the longer it's going to take to recover, which means we're going to be putting out way more tax dollars to help these businesses. I would rather put a business in a position in which we can quickly help them, make them less reliant on the tax dollars, and everyone's happy. I love this idea. And Sumner's not the only one. They may be doing it a little unique. I haven't seen a lot of portable parklets that are being leased out, but we've certainly seen, like in Spokane, for example, they were opening up parking lots and they were changing some of the rules and permits so you can serve people. I mean, it's not a great look to serve people in a parking lot, but you can safely eat outside without having to worry about the mandate. So that's good.
I like it. I'm here for it. Patio seating is always better anyway, so.
For all those restaurants in Newcastle, bring it on.
Yeah, we just got a blazing onion with a patio.
Ooh, a blazing onion.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. Some have called me the equivalent of a blazing onion because I make people cry.
You do make people
and
cry.
And I spit out a lot of hot takes. It's blazing. We come back. Attorney General Bill Barr jumps into Antifa. We'll tell you what he said. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show on KTTH. Attorney General Bill Barr gave a pretty wide-ranging and I think instructive interview over the weekend on Mark Levin's Fox News Weekend Show. And I think it's worth diving into, especially on the conversation about Antifa, because we are coming up on the waning months of President Trump's first term. It could obviously be his only term. And for those of us who value law and order, the rule of law, for those of us who actually want to see some of this chaos end, understand that if he doesn't win re-election, it could mean the very same people allowing the rioting and the looting to go pretty much unpunished. Those very same people, whether it's Joe Biden or whomever's going to be his VP or anyone on his cabinet, they're going to be in the White House. They're the ones in large part okay with the chaos that's going on, or they're the ones who are pretending none of it is actually happening. And part of the issue is, and it's starting to change, but Attorney General Barr made a point of the media isn't really covering the violence in the streets all that well.
I've been appalled at what's on this violence because it's happening right out in the streets. Anyone with eyes can see what's happening. They yep. see the violence. They see these groups of agitators in their black outfits, in their helmets and their shields, which incidentally have hammer and sickle on them most of the time, rushing the police, causing violence, throwing rocks, the people showing up with the rocks and the frozen bottles. That's happening. That's happening in front of people. You don't see it on any of the national news. You don't see it on the networks. You don't see it on the other cables stations. And yet you hear about these peaceful demonstrators. So it's a lie. The American people are being told a lie by the media.
Now, he's obviously painting a rather broad brush, but when it comes to the national media, I think for the most part, he's right. I don't see any meaningful coverage of any of the violence that's going on, whether it's in Seattle or in Portland or Chicago even, get a lot of attention in the CNN coverage, in the MSNBC coverage. They cover it a little bit. Certainly the Chicago incident, over the weekend, they covered some. But for the most part, unless it's a one-time thing where they'll give it some coverage, if it goes on and on and on, like what happened in Portland for over 70 nights, they lose interest rather quickly because it shows, I believe, that the politicians that they ideologically, the reporters and anchors ideologically support, it shows that they don't know what it is that they're doing. And I think that CNN in particular thinks it plays into a talking point coming from President Trump. Now, rather than say the president is correct in calling out the level of violence that's happening in American cities, rather than say that's correct, that's the right way, they're ignoring it because they think calling it out helps the president win re-election, and they don't want him to win re-election. I truly believe that's what's going on in most of the cases, not all of them. I obviously don't expect CNBC to be covering the Portland riots or anything that's happening in Seattle, but I will note that Fox Business covers what's been going on in Seattle because I've been on many times with Neil Cavuto. I was on this morning. By the way, if you want to watch that video, it's on my Twitter feed. But for the most part, I think the media nationally is failing. I think the local media is doing a pretty good job. I think Como and Q13 and Cairo 7 do the best. I think the Seattle Times is a joke. I think that King 5 coverage of this is a joke. I don't think that you can go to those sources on this topic and get consistent, truthful, reliable information. They either want to play it too safe or they want to completely ignore it, in large part because, again, the people behind some of the stories tend to be pretty progressive journalists. And what's missing in all of this is an honest conversation about what motivates the Antifa goons that are out there, whether it's in the Pacific Northwest or anywhere across the country. And Attorney General Bill Barr got into that.
The desire for power, that the left wants power because that is essentially their state of grace and their secular religion. They want to run people's lives so they can design utopia for all of us. And that's what, you know, that's what turns them on. And it's the lust for power.
The lust for power, and not just power, but control. That's what he really means. He's talking about control. We've seen it happen all across the country. I mean, just look locally on a low level of what the control is. We don't want you using plastic bags, so we're going to ban them. They decided that it's an existential threat to the environment, and they would ban it. But then, of course, they went to straws. Then they went to cutlery. They want to tell you how you're supposed to live because they don't believe you will make the right choices on your own. They did it with a sugary beverage tax. All of these types of laws are there, them telling us that they know what it is they're doing, that they know better than all of us know about how to live our individual lives, and we're going to be subjected to their control. And sometimes you can like the policy that they're pushing while also acknowledging that a lot of this has to do with control. They want to control whether or not you can be a millionaire. Because in Seattle, going after someone who's wealthy, are you talking about someone who makes six figures, low six figures, $120,000? That's not wealthy in Seattle because of how expensive it is to live here, because of all the taxes that are being hit. But then when you go all across the country, same thing. I mean, you see similar laws when it comes to these kinds of issues passed in D.C., New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland. They want power to control. And when they're using that ideology to engage in the kind of fascistic behavior that we see and the violence that we see, Attorney General Bill Barr made a really apt comparison. He called it the equivalent of guerrilla warfare. Here he is explaining how that works.
What they do is they are essentially shielding themselves or shrouding themselves in First Amendment activity. They go into the demonstrations, which are exercising First Amendment activity, and they insinuate themselves in there to shield themselves. That's where they swim. And what they do is they hijack these demonstrations, and they provoke violence, and they have various tiers of people from the sort of top provocateurs down through people who are their minions and sort of run the violent yep. missions. But it's a difficult phenomenon to deal with. They're highly organized at these demonstrations, and these tactics that they use are designed, and the way the media responds to them, of course, the media doesn't take footage of what's happening.
And again, locally, that's not necessarily the case, but I mean, he's 100% right on the organizational value to what these quote-unquote leaders provide, because I was there yesterday, for example, at the pro-police rally, and there was this Antifa and agitator counter-protest. Not all of them are members of Antifa in any meaningful way, but they certainly talk and dress the way that they do. But you see some people in the crowd of the counter-protesters who don't just come prepared for a violent fight if they feel the need to get violent, but you see them communicating to each other on walkie-talkies. They bring in their own vehicles to block streets to give them more protection. They do this kind of stuff all the time, and even simply using an umbrella. If you want to know why they use an umbrella, it's not just for a weapon, which they have used to assault police officers and rally goers, or in not yesterday, obviously, but in the past, anyone who might get in their way. But they use the umbrellas as a means to block the media and anyone in the crowd from filming some of their lawlessness. I've got plenty of video yesterday of individuals getting in my face, putting their umbrellas there, trying to block me. And they get to do that without touching me. Then it's an assault if they touch me. But it's much more efficient and covers more space to use a rather large umbrella. They're doing it. They're, as the attorney general said, shrouding themselves in the First Amendment, because they have the right to be there and they have the right to block videos like that. But they don't have the right to get in your face and assault you. And there was one moment, and again, the video is on my Twitter feed, and you can also just text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link. There's video of a photojournalist being assaulted because he was there videotaping, or photographing in this case, an assault against a woman who was trying to put out a burning American flag. This is what they do. And I would argue this is the exact reason why the president refers to them, Antifa, as domestic terrorists. And deserving of that classification. I agree with that. It should be classified as a domestic terrorist group, even if it doesn't have a national structure and it's more being done in sort of regional cells. They are driven by an ideology, and they are willing to violate the law, commit acts of violence in furtherance of that particular ideology. That is the textbook definition of domestic terrorism. And I'm glad that the attorney general is calling it out. My fear is that if we don't have another 4 years of President Trump, the lawlessness is going to get worse because they will have been rewarded. We see it in real time here in Seattle of them being rewarded by defunding the police. They got violent. They took over a 6-block radius of Capitol Hill. They murdered people. They committed arson. And what do they get? They get rewarded by a Seattle City Council who listens to everything that they say, ignoring the rest of us. And it's only going to get worse with the Joe Biden in office. That's what I believe. Now, yesterday, again, there was a pro-police rally. I was there. I actually gave a speech, which we will play when we come back right here on The Jason Rant Show.